Okay, Jamie. Mm-hmm. So we're about to watch The French Mistake. Mm-hmm. You obviously haven't seen it before.
I have heard the name. I have a vague idea. I feel like I know the basic plot of it. I feel like I said that last week.
Similarly to when we watched the episode Changing Channels, right? Mm-hmm. I wanted to do a live reaction, not because of any like huge plot developments or anything, more because like you had been talking about the trickster being an angel for so long. And I was like, this kind of episode, like the live reaction will mostly just be us giggling. It's a silly, fun episode. I don't mind telling you that out the gate. But something that you have said and things that we've talked about are so relevant to this episode in a way that I didn't even realize until I was rewatching the season. And I've been dying to get to it. So I would like to very quickly ask you to just, when you think about the Sarah Gamble long con, and you think of like all of the silly things that we've talked about and the silly like jokes we've made, I want you to keep those in mind.
Should I do a real quick recap?
Do you want to do a recap? Just for anyone who like hasn't listened to us in a little while, or maybe this is your first episode, which wild choice, but hey, welcome. Maybe let's do a quick recap, refresher, because we've had our Sarah Gamble long con going since Faith, I'm pretty sure, in season one.
Okay, so actually I think it was Houses of the Holy.
Houses of the Holy, you're so right, so mid-season two.
So let's do a quick refresh. The Sarah Gamble long con is my theory. My theory basically boils down to a couple of key facets. The overview, the over idea is that Sarah Gamble had a very specific destination that she wanted for this show. And so she was putting elements of it into her episodes to try and push them closer to that ultimate goal. And of course we know, because we're recording it after it all been done, she does eventually become showrunner. We are in the middle of her showrun seasons. Essentially the key tenets of what Sarah Gamble wants, based on the Sarah Gamble long con, which is mostly just a joke, is she wanted angels really fucking desperately. We also know from outside metatextual stuff that there was a writer in the writer's room who did want angels earlier on than season four. Mm-hmm. So,
and Kripke said no, basically. And Kripke shut it down.
Said no, shut it down. So we posit that that writer was Sarah Gamble and that she was trying to make it happen. And then Eric Kripke was like, stop trying to make angels happen. They're never going to happen. And then, of course, the writer's strike hit and they got angels. And then Sarah Gamble basically went, I don't like that Misha Collins fella. So basically,
I don't like his version of what an angel is. Yeah.
So basically, the theory goes that Sarah Gamble really, 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 really fucking wanted angels. Kept on getting told no, 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 no. Then they had the writer's strike, brought angels in, and which she was really happy about. And then she really rapidly realized that she didn't like the version of angels that Misha was giving. She liked like Anna and Uriel and those sort of angels. And so now she's like,
how can I make Cass just not around?
Yes. How can I make him just disappear a little bit? Like, how can I spread out his episodes to the max?
And so that's what you've missed on the Sarah Gamble long con. There are, like, other things, like, oh, these writers are in on it, and these writers are on the outs of it. But essentially it boils down to Sarah Gamble really wanted angels. And we're not saying that she was plotting to kill Eric Kripke to take over his show.
But we're not saying
that. But we're not saying that. And so I would just love for you, Jamie, and for those listening at home, if you haven't rewatched this episode in a while, or you don't remember why I'm making Jamie recap this right now so that's at the top of her mind, I recommend you go and rewatch this episode and understand why I decided to do this as a live reaction. Because even I forgot how relevant some of our general conversations were going to be. So,
and also we're making everyone who filled out the survey and said they wanted a live reaction for The French Mistake really happy.
Actually, also, and I don't know if that's the reason why or if it's just because it's a fan favorite, but yeah, a lot of people in our survey, by the way, like, thank you very much for all of you who did fill that out, have really wanted this as a live reaction. And so it's also to indulge you all at home. So I hope that it lives up to your expectations. Jamie, I hope you enjoy. And without further ado, I think we should probably just get going.
3, 2, 1. Icon.
You know it's a big deal when they flash back to
season one, Meg. They're really going all out for the vibes this week, aren't they?
Uh-huh. You have no idea. I actually haven't seen The Godfather, so I'm glad that they summarized it. God, imagine watching this live.
I hate to give it to them, but that was smooth.
It's good, huh?
So do we think this is genuinely their trailer?
I think they're taking the piss.
How much do you think they pay to license that?
Right.
So just fully steal a car.
I've always felt really bad for the, like, set people in this moment, because, like, they would have spent so long. So Cliff is their bodyguard in Vancouver.
The pop-ups of Jared in the background.
And Jen, did you see them?
Yeah. She's so iconic for this.
I know. Look like such freaks.
So when do they get institutionalized?
Literally.
Cliff is a real one.
I know.
The jaw fucking thing. They were like, what if we just make the blooper reels into an episode?
Literally.
If we can get the weapons, then we'll have the weapons.
And the lock, I imagine we'll still have the lock. Misha taking a photo in the background.
Why is it giving changing channels vibes?
Literally.
When will they learn about putting things in outer pockets? He's just a goofy little dude.
Masterclass in foreshadowing.
Is that actually him or an actor playing him?
I think it's an actor. Okay. Now remember the Sarah Gamble long con. And so Sarah Gamble kills Misha Collins.
Like the Ninja Turtle.
Dean Core.
The attractive crime. Angel with a shotgun. That's what that whole obsession thing was about, right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Wait, was Eric Kripke on the Sarah Gamble long con?
Just you wait.
So maybe not.
So to recap, Sarah Gamble stripped Misha Collins of his angelhood and had him stabbed in an alley and then shot Kripke to death. Not that she's out to kill Eric Kripke and take over his show. But she did straight up have an angel of her design shoot him dead in a car park.
She also shoots
Singer. Wing update. Do you see why I was like so excited to see this episode based purely in Sarah Gamble look of shit?
I have a few things that I want to talk about.
Hi, I'm Beth.
And I'm Jamie. Welcome to Driver Picks the Podcast.
Where I pick the podcast.
And I shut my cake hole.
And today we are discussing the highly anticipated 15th episode of the 6th season of Supernatural, titled The French Mistake. Jamie, what did you think?
Okay, so I want to start by talking about some implications.
Okay.
I know you love the implications.
Yes, I do.
I want to talk about, like, a theory that I started developing a little bit ago. Not Sarah Gamble long con, though. We will get into that.
Yes, we can't not talk about it.
This is just the top of my mind.
Okay.
And I think this episode solidified for me Balthazar as a Sam adjacent character. And I'm going to compare this to It's a Terrible Life.
All right.
This episode, we only ever see Sam's house or Jared Padalecki's house.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, for the comedic bit of Ruby.
Yeah.
But in It's a Terrible Life, which is basically a similar concept, but a Dean, like a Dean-coded episode, we only ever see Dean's house.
You're so right.
I think it's really interesting that, for me at least, this is suggesting to me that maybe Balthazar is like a Sam-coded character rather than a Dean side character, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I actually love that. I never made that connection before because, yeah, you're so right. Like, arguably, both episodes show an alternate version of the characters that we know. Oh, obviously, like, Jensen and Jared as human beings are, like, it's not the same, but you know what I mean. As an equivalence in terms of
symmetry.
You know, symmetry, yeah. But yeah, you're right. And obviously, yes, they do it for the gag of Jared is literally married to Jen, you know.
Yeah.
And that's very fun. I love that they made an inclusion of their, like, wedding photos and stuff. Mm-hmm. I do think it's excellent. No, that's very fun. Did you have any more expansion on it, or is it just to point out that little bit?
I think, like, because that's kind of the basis of it. But mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting because, like, it hadn't really clicked for me that Balthazar was a Sam side character.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought about it that way either.
We see, like, a couple of weeks ago, like, Sam goes to Balthazar, Sam's worked with Balthazar. Like, if one of the brothers is going to interact with Balthazar independently of Cass,
it's going to be Sam.
At least in my brain. Balthazar is associated with Cass. Mm-hmm. So he's associated with Dean by extension.
Yeah.
So I think this is really interesting to be, like, kind of just highlight the fact that, no, actually...
I actually think that you might be onto something there because I personally don't view almost like any of the Angel characters as assigned to Dean because I think that, especially at this point in the series...
Except Cass.
Yeah, except Cass. Because I think like earlier in the series, like you could put him with like Gabriel we've talked about before and stuff. But I think at this point with Gabriel gone and Zachariah gone, because Dean is so distrustful of literally any Angel that isn't Cass... I don't think that any of them can be put in that basket, but because Sam always had that underlying current of faith, and actually, I noticed in this episode, when Dean is saying to Sam, like, oh, you know, if we stayed here, like, you'd do all right for yourself kind of thing, in that scene, I never noticed before, but Sam is leaning up against, like, a doorframe, and next to him on the wall is a flyer that's talking about Roy LaGrange, the faith healer from 112 Faith.
Mm.
And I have never picked up on that in like the set of Bobby's house before.
Yeah.
But I was like, that's really interesting that Sam is being postured next to this poster that's literally referencing the episode called Faith.
Mm-hmm. I wonder who wrote that. Probably no one important.
Probably no one important.
Yeah.
Like, definitely not anyone really that we've really thought about before.
A blip in the, you know, spectrum of supernatural writers.
Yeah, I bet they were just a once-off writer who never did anything else. But yeah, so like, that's really interesting, like talking about Sam being associated with the other angel characters versus Dean being associated pretty much at this point solely with Cass.
I think this is like really interesting if you're looking at it from like a framing perspective.
Yeah.
Like seeing someone's home is so like almost intimate. It's interesting that in the episode where Balthazar sends them to the alternate universe or puts them in a position that's alternate universe adjacent, whether it's an actual alternate universe or not, doesn't really matter. What matters is that in that scenario, when Balthazar's the one that put him in there, we see Sam's house.
We see Jensen's trailer.
But I would argue not the same thing. But
that's still a workplace. Yeah. Like, I mean, to be fair, like, I don't know how attached actors are to their trailers. I've never experienced it. But, like, it's still not, like, your home base. I think it's definitely interesting. Especially because, like, in that episode with Zachariah, like, we barely see anything of Sam. Like, we only ever see Sam basically in his cubicle or interacting with Dean. Like, that's it.
Whereas this episode, it's like we see actually quite a bit of Sam.
I think that this episode is a lot more balanced.
Yes. But yeah, so I think it's really interesting that we are having this episode and it does actually focus like a decent amount on Jared Padalecki and Sam. And I think what would have been really funny, and I'm really sad that they missed the opportunity, is having Sam pulled out Jared's credit cards and them all going through and then, you know, Dean pulling out Jensen's, all of them declining. Like, I think that would have been so fucking funny.
Yeah, no, I had the same thought as we were watching it, actually.
Because he has the one credit card that declines.
I genuinely think that that is maybe one of the only things that they chose not to do that they could have done as a gag, because this episode is just almost nonstop laughs. They commit to this bit so hard from the cold open.
You're going to do, like, audio truncation on silence in the thing. And you're not going to be able to cut any of it. Because we were laughing this entire goddamn time.
Yeah, and like, don't get us wrong. There were some moments that have aged a little. But comparatively to like a lot of the other like comedy episodes, this one holds up.
Some of the gags are a little bit like, little dated. But none of them I was like, oh no, fuck that shit. Like,
yeah, the only thing that I would like actually want to call out as a bit of like a yikes thing, like specifically, is number one, the comment that Dean makes to about Raphael, and it's like, dude looks like a lady, which is just like, okay, can we...
Dude is a lady. Get over it. Move on.
Let's... Gender is so... Gender is just... And when it comes to angels, it's a whole fucking thing. And, like, I think that it's just kind of like a bit of a... It's a cheap, cheap jab, and it doesn't age well because it feels dismissive of gender identities. But to be fair, we're looking at it a 2023 lens. It's been like a decade since this episode came out, and like the social shift has moved a lot. But the other thing that I did want to touch on, that is the only other thing in this episode that I'm always kind of like, don't necessarily love that about, is the issue of consent when it comes to Sam and Jen, because he is not who she thinks he is.
Yeah.
And, like, it is a both-way thing, because she fully walks up to him and starts, like, kissing him and stuff. She doesn't know that that's inappropriate, but he does.
Yeah.
And, like, at the end of them staying at the house, like, it's pretty heavily implied that they sleep together, and I'm kind of like, it can't be consensual because he is actually not who she thinks he is.
Yeah.
And so but I also, don't love that.
I don't know how he's meant to explain it to her without sounding, like, fucking batshit insane.
Exactly. Like, so, like, I mean, to be fair, it's not like people who are dating or living together are fucking every night. Like, I'm sure he could have been like, you know, I'm tired. How about we just go to bed? You know, but you can't convince me that that's what happened. Like, the implication is very explicit. Like, I understand they're running it for a gag, and I understand the purpose of it. And, like, I get that they are literally married in real life. But it's just the fact that, like, in this fictional realm, it would be like if he had an identical twin and they just swap roles for funsies and didn't tell her. Do you know what I mean? Like, that, for me, is just a little on the ick side. But I think as far as supernatural goes, the bar is on the ground, so...
I also think it's not actually something you really ever have to be concerned by. Like, short of having an evil twin who pretends to be, like, this is never gonna really happen to you. Like,
I mean, to be fair, the whole thing is fiction, but, like, you understand why I wanted to point it out. What I will say, though, Jen mm-hmm. looks fucking incredible.
She's killing it this episode.
Oh my goodness. Not only is her performance fucking so mm-hmm. fun and just excellent, like when she comes out in mascara.
And she's like, Vicious Vincent Dash.
So good, so iconic. That gets gift. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure you can imagine there are so many gifts of this episode. Yeah. But that particular, like, Misha, he's been stabbed, is like, ill Misha is dead. It's so funny. Love to see it. I do miss her, actually. She is one of those actresses who I, like, as much as I think it made sense for Ruby's arc to end where it did, I do miss Jen. Yeah. I think that she was a really fun addition to the mm-hmm. cast. But what are you gonna do?
Okay. I want to talk about the other implication that I really wanted to talk about.
You had another?
I had two implications. Okay. Like, we also had all of the Sarah Gamble stuff.
Which we'll get to. We'll get to.
That's not even an implication. That's hitting us over the head with a bat.
That is so funny.
I want to talk about the other implication here. It is, I cannot stress enough, it is literally the tiniest moment. It is literally like, blink and you'll miss it.
Oh no. Balthazar, when you say things like this, it usually doesn't end well for me.
Balthazar calls Cass Cassie.
Oh yeah.
AKA Dean's first fucking love.
I know.
Like,
when we watched it, I was like, oh, is this the first instance of that? And I couldn't remember. But yeah.
Like, you're seriously telling me.
Uh-huh.
This is what they decided to do.
Mm-hmm.
AU by Cassie was actually possessed by Cass the entire time.
Oh god. I
They only say it once. And it's like the smallest little moment, but I'm like, they have to know. Like, surely they have to know.
This is the thing. I don't think that it would have been considered. Like, of all...
You think this is still too early on the fandom for them to think, oh, hey, maybe...
No, I definitely...
Or do you think they've just forgotten about Cassie? Either way, it's a tragedy.
Definitely at this point in production, they absolutely knew about Destiel. They absolutely were playing into it. Because if you go back and watch the blooper reels for... season 5.
Which, they didn't somehow make an episode that was just like a long blooper reel.
Literally, this episode is just blooper reel the episode, and I'm obsessed with that. But, yeah, like, they're absolutely, as production, are aware of this. But also, I just can't imagine that they connected those dots. I really think that's an accidental thing. To be fair, I don't know, maybe Ben Edlund did his homework. Oh, this is a Ben Edlund episode, by the way, and directed by Charles Beeson, who is one of your preferred directors as well, so that's very fun.
If it is Ben Edlund, do we think that Ben Edlund was like, I'm just going to like sprinkle this in here and just assume that nobody else would even notice?
Ben Edlund, always see you.
Ben Edlund Longcon next.
I definitely appreciate that you noticed that because it's definitely something that I see and I think is really funny. But I personally think that that's probably just like an accidental inclusion that just has implications they forgot about.
Yeah. There's a difference between, you know, like, I was calling Lucifer Lucy as a joke.
We also get Raffi this episode, which I do think is so funny.
And, like, that's what I mean. Like, Raffi and Lucy is like, oh, you're just shortening the names. Cassie is actually lengthening his short, like...
Yeah.
He's already got a nickname, Cass. And they're lengthening it, and they're lengthening it in a way that actually invokes another character that we have canonically confirmed as the first person Dean ever loved.
Yeah, the 8D chess, really the 8D chessin.
Yeah. They really do that. And also, it's not even just like a like an on-set joke thing because it happens before they do the universe switch.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely. It's like in the canonical like main universe of Supernatural, this is what they've done.
And I do think that Balthazar as a character is just enough of a little shit that like you could pay it off as him intentionally doing it. We do get a line from him.
Do we think Balthazar ships it then?
I do think that. And I, we
because
do
have, it's also used in the context of, like, your Cassie or something. Like, that is a... Like, they're talking about, like, your Castiel. You know, like, your angel. Like,
I don't remember if this is a line we've already had or if it's a line that's upcoming. But it's not a spoiler, so I don't mind telling it to you. But the line is from Balthazar, and he says, oh, sorry, you have me confused with the other angel. You know, the one in a dirty trench coat that's in love with you. That's a canon line from Balthazar. So yeah, I think Balthazar knows.
But do we think he ships it?
Oh, I think that he doesn't like Dean enough.
Because he's a Sam side character. I'm telling you, man, my theory is real.
I 100% see it. I do want to talk about Balthazar just a little bit because obviously he is in this episode.
Yeah.
I adore Balthazar. Mm. I think he's very fun. I wondered if you had any particular moments that you liked with him or, like, where your vibe is with him. And not that we get any real, like, plot or character development for him.
No, I just enjoyed, like, the vibe was really fun. Like, you know, no complaints. Nothing that I'm really like, oh, yeah, my new favorite character.
Yeah. No, that's valid. I just think he's very fun. He's got a lot of really good lines. This episode, you know, Dean's like, I said, hey. And he's like, yes, you did.
Twice.
Good for you. And it's just like, I fucking love it. He really is, for me, the, like, Crowley angel equivalent. Like, he has that same kind of, he doesn't give a shit. He will just talk back to them, and I do find that fun.
Also, we get the line, like, more importantly, me.
Yeah, exactly. He's got his priorities in order.
Okay, what I do want to talk about, though, this week is, I understand in the context of the story how it makes sense, but I think that actually, realistically, practically, it doesn't make any sense, because presumably they're mic'd up and they're just casually standing there talking about murder. I'm assuming there's some sort of microphone in their vicinity, because that's typically how recording any sort of film or TV works.
Yeah, I have no idea. But I think we can put this under the same basket as we do for Leverage, when they're just speaking out loud. It's like, have you tried being subtle?
But I did want to point this out, because you do roast me every week.
Yes, no, that's valid. Leverage. That's valid. I have a question for you.
Yes.
How did you feel about Misha playing Misha in this episode?
He's just a little dude!
The reason that I asked is because, you know that whole bit where he's like, goodnight, little fella, and it's kind of like condescending or whatever? So when this episode got pitched, or they found out that they were going to be doing it, Misha actually went and asked, hey, can the version of me be, like, a dick? Like, can I just, like, can my the portrayal of me be, like, I'm some fucking entitled asshole? Like, I just kind of want to, like, have this really fun, like, I get to kind of be a shit, like, I'm too good for this, you know, kind of moment. And they said no. And so of the lines he did get, he tried to make them as, like, dismissive and shitty as possible. And he's like, so the problem is that, like, now the character comes across as, like, both earnestly him and also kind of a prick, which makes him reflectively look like an actual prick instead of a caricature of a prick, which is what he was going for. And I just think it's so funny. I love his performance this episode. To be fair, all three of the main trio, like, everyone is killing it. Those three in particular are smashing it out of the park.
What I do think is a real loss is we don't get to see them, like, Jared and Jensen actually playing themselves. If that makes sense. Like, because they are playing Dean and Sam the entire time.
Yeah.
Like, I do think, and I don't know how it would have worked to get them to actually play themselves, but I do think one of the really fun thing about this episode is watching, like, a lot of the cast and crew play themselves, essentially. You know, we obviously get Jen as Jen and Misha as Misha, and I'm assuming it's an actor who plays Robert Singer, but, like,
I think that the acting in this episode is so fun, both in terms of, like, the delivery of lines and also the physical comedy. Is great. Like, the fake acting when they're trying to shoot that scene is just so fucking funny. Like, there's a moment where Jared has, like, a hand on his hip and he's, like, swinging his other arm around, like, trying to act casual. He's, like, talking to the ceiling because Dean said not to look at the cameras.
I do think, yeah, it's hilarious that the voice of Sarah Gamble's like, they probably don't even know who I am, and, like, no, you can't bring in Kripke, that's undermining my authority.
Yeah, literally. Like, I do think that it's actually a really interesting commentary as well. I actually wrote down a couple of notes about that scene where Bob is saying, it appears that Jared and Jensen were seen beating an extra to death, and then someone's like, well, not fully to death, it's like, you know, partially to death. And it's like, yeah, we'll certainly follow up on that. And number one, that's so fucking funny. That's so funny. Like, yeah, we'll follow up on that. And then, yeah, so they're talking about, like, you know, Sarah's like, well, maybe I should just, like, fly down and speak to them. And then they're like, oh, I'm not sure if Jared and Jensen know who she is, strictly speaking. Like, you know, she's new, no offense. And it's like, I really do think that that's kind of an interesting commentary and insight into how she was being received as a showrunner. Because so many people reacted poorly to season 6 after loving the entirety of Kripke. And so, like, you know, Kripke was the creator, and, like, there was all of this hype around his name. And so it kind of was like, well, who's this new showrunner? Like, who does she think she is? And so I feel like it's a really interesting, like, comment on the environment that they were working in, and especially her coming back and saying, well, how does that make me look? I'm supposed to be running this thing. And then the jab at Kripke for fucking Octocobra, so funny. Like,
I do just want to point out, though, that they called it out this week. The scene where they sit on the Impala and talk about
Their feelings. And my favourite part about that is that, like, oh, we could cut that. And it's like, oh yeah, and do you want to deal with the hate mail?
As if it's some sort of thing that the fans are actually, like, that's what the people care about.
Like, I know that you're saying that as like, oh, well, like, people don't care. But yeah, people do care. Like, people would have been mad if they didn't have the melodrama. Because it's part of the show. It's essential to the foundation of the show. And it seems silly, but Jamie, imagine this show without those scenes. We would never get plot progression. Like, you think the pacing is bad now.
Yeah, but without those scenes, you could put in an actual plot development.
Speaking of the discussion they were having about, like, things to cut or yep. whatever, and they're talking about the scene where they're jumping through the glass, and they're talking about a freeze frame, and they're kind of making fun of it and how it's, like, poorly utilised and stuff. And then we actually get a freeze frame at the opposite end of the episode, and it's a very fun little
And we also back. Get the, meh, good enough.
Yeah, literally, which is so funny. For those who know, there is a notoriously fucking horrendous freeze frame.
When's this? Like, what season?
We're talking, like, season 13, 14. Okay, yeah. Like, it's a while away. But I have it all caps. Oh, freeze frame, how you will come back to haunt me. Because the fact that they were making fun of it here, and, like, the whole bit where, like, Bob is going, season 6, and it's like, you don't even know. Because right now you're shading a season that is, like, 8 seasons from now. The dodgeball meme is just unhinged. Speaking of which, I think we should talk about the Sarah Gamble Long Gone and the dodgeball that is that discussion.
Look, I've already explained it today. Would you like to start us off here then?
I just think it's really funny that we've had this joke. And I mean, like, to be fair, like, the joke that, like, Sarah, like, doesn't like Misha or whatever because of, like, she finally got angels and they weren't what she wanted, so she keeps trying to get rid of him and he just won't go away.
Because, again, the hate mail would be ridiculous.
Hilariously, yeah. So, and, like, Ben Edlund, who we've talked about before, is, like, one of the writers that we consider in on the Gamble Long Con, right? They're in cahoots in our very silly joke. But the way...
And in real life, clearly.
Obviously, yeah. This is 100% true, supported fact. But, no, the way that in one episode she removed or Ben, rather, removed Misha's angelhood and then had him kidnapped and stabbed to death in an alley.
By a character who she would consider a real angel, quote unquote.
Yeah, literally. And also, they completely move on from Misha's death. Jen is upset for like half a second. Jared and Jensen are like, where's the body?
And the fucking showrunners are like, at least we got a magazine cover.
We got front page of Variety. Oh, but a tragedy. Yeah, tragic. Anyway, so fucking funny.
Well, you know what? They probably realised that Misha literally dying is the only way they could no longer have Cass on the show without inciting a riot.
Genuinely. But then the thing that really hit me when I was rewatching this episode prior to us recording this season was Eric Kripke getting shot to death by an angel in the car park. Killed me dead. Because I cannot remember which one of us said it.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot remember. But the quote that is from our fucking podcast about, I'm not saying that Sarah Gamble was plotting to kill Eric Kripke and take over his show so she could have angels, but I'm not saying that.
I feel like that's probably a quote that's pulled from, like, Houses of the Holy or something.
It's
like,
so early
it's,
on.
It's when we first pitched the Sarah Gamble Long Con.
And I forgot that this happened. And so when I rewatched this episode, the way that I cried laughing, and I was so excited for you to see it. The Sarah Gamble Long Con is really the gift that just keeps on giving. It's
by far my most important contribution to this fandom.
I think so.
I've written thousands of words of fic.
Hours and hours of podcast content. Hours of podcast
content. I've made some really interesting connections.
Mm-hmm.
And yet,
this is the funniest fucking contribution.
The Sarah Gamble Long Con just keeps on going.
I'm obsessed with it. Do you have any thoughts, feelings regarding that whole scenario, just Sarah Gamble Long Con in general?
It's almost like, I just believe kind of like it stands on its own 2 feet.
It doesn't actually need discussion.
We don't really need to discuss, like, you watched the episode, presumably. Like, maybe this is one where you decided not to watch back the episode because you're like, I've seen it a million times. There's no point in me rewatching it. But they were like, let's kill off Misha and Eric Kripke real quick. Let's have Sarah Gamble talk about how she's struggling to hold on to power, essentially. Let's talk about how she's got a vision and she wants what she wants. And maybe don't undermine that vision. And then she has an angel shoot.
Kripke dead.
Yeah.
To Western music in slow-mo.
And then she has the same angel also shoot Robert Singer.
Yeah, that is also interesting because I don't think we've ever talked about Rob Singer.
Yeah, but he was complicit in Eric Kripke's plan, so clearly he has to go.
You're so right. Noticeably, Ben Edlund survives this episode.
Though what I will say about this episode, because I've obviously heard of this episode and I knew that there was an episode with this premise, I am surprised they didn't take more pot shots at some of their previous episodes. Like when Sam's trying to gauge if like any of the apocalypse stuff happened, like I'm really surprised they didn't decide to take like a pot shot at like, so there's no racist monster trucks or like, because that's typically what they do in an episode like this. Monster of the Sam at the end of this book, prime example, they take so many pot shots of like, I made you live through bad writing, like this and this and this.
I made you live through bugs. Like, yeah. I think that they could have gone that route, but it feels like maybe the jokes felt more at the expense of the concept of the show and then, like, Jensen and Jared as, like, people, I guess. And, like,
people watch our lives, well, apparently not many.
Yeah, that fucking hilarious.
And somehow this fucking bullshit is still relevant 10 years later.
I know. The whole, like, joke, I think Bob says it, like, 2 or 3 times through the episode, where he just kind of deep sighs and goes, well, season 6. You know, season 6. I guess this is where we run out of ideas. And that is so fucking funny to me.
Like, but I guess we just gotta keep on fucking trying. What are we meant to do at this point? But
when Jensen, or Dean rather, is saying, we matter in the other world, and poor Bob is just like, what is happening? And Jensen's like, you know, this all this nonsense. He's like, oh, well, I wouldn't call it nonsense. It's so funny. Like, because I think at the end of the day, no matter how much they're talking shit and, like, making fun of themselves, they all care.
Yeah.
Like, creatives behind anything. Like, you don't go into that line of work because you're not passionate or you don't care. Like, especially you're working on a show that has been running for a number of years. Like, if you're staying there and you know the people and you're working, like, I have to assume you're doing it out of more than just a paycheck. You're going because you care about the thing that you're creating. And I think that goes for any creative project. And so I do think it's nice that even though they're, like, talking shit and poking fun, like, at the end of the day, you do have that moment where he's like, well, you know, I think it's actually kind of good sometimes, like.
I do wish, though, that we'd gotten to meet the costume designer and they'd been like, okay, well, now time to hand over your layers. And then just have, like, a montage of them, like, layer and removing, like, the 6 layers so they're just down in their normal, like, T-shirt or whatever.
Yeah.
Because we got a little bit of it with, like, Misha, like, removing his tie and, like,
the coat. It's bizarre to me to see him wearing, like, a printed tee underneath. Well,
it says, like, Namaste, doesn't it? Like,
I couldn't read it. I've never been able to, like, tell. But to be fair, I've never looked that close.
I'm pretty sure it says Namaste. Yeah, so all of the recreations of it have Namaste.
Okay.
They've redesigned it so you could buy a copy of Misha Collins' Namaste t-shirt from The French Mistake.
What a hot ticket item.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of Misha and real life things, I think I've already told you this, but I'll reiterate it here for the sake of those listening. The tweets from this episode and stuff, as this episode was airing live on television, which, by the way, imagine you turn on your television and you're presented with this with no forewarning, no possible concept of what's coming. The way that it would destroy me, I would have died watching this live. But Misha was live tweeting along with himself in the show. So, like, if you were watching the show and you had your phone with you, you would get tweet notifications literally as the character was tweeting on your television screen. And I just think that, number one, that's hilarious. And number two, I'm so glad that Misha took the opportunity to be the funniest fucker on the internet that day, because he didn't have to do that. But the fact that he did is kind of iconic. Like, I do love that.
I kind of wish, though, that he'd also tweeted out, like, when he gets stabbed, like a fake news article of, like, actor Misha Collins stabbed
to death. I did love the description from The Witness where he's saying the scary man killed the attractive crying man. Like, iconic description.
I do want to say, though, we did get some Meg in the, like,
intro
segment where it's like, this is what you need to know to go into this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so mad that we got her in there, but we didn't get any actual Meg this week.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bummer. It's literally just to remind people how the, like, blood cooling thing works so that when Misha dies, it, like, makes sense.
But we got shown season 1 Meg, which is, like, a real throwback at this point.
Yeah, it is.
And, like, you know, so iconic. I'm sorry. Like, nothing's going to ever beat season one Meg for me, I don't think.
Wow. The show really peaked with Scarecrow for you?
No.
What a hot fucking take.
No, Shadow. Clearly, that's the one where we get all the Meg.
I'm so sorry. You're right.
All the Meg, none of the John. Because after that, we start seeing too much John around Meg.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, middle point.
Okay. It's season one, episode 16. That's Supernatural's peak for you.
Absolutely.
That's so depressing. That's, I have terrible news for you.
That's the episode with the most Meg content.
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, to be fair, like, Meg is still around. But yeah, not Meg 1.0. Obviously.
I think the only other episode that you could argue for having more Meg content would be Born Under a Bad Sign.
Yeah. And
because Sam is technically possessed by Meg the entire time. But I don't think we can really count that.
Yeah, it's not the actress that you would associate with Meg. It's just Jared. Anywho, wrong episode. Most of my notes, I'm going to be real, is literally just my favorite quotes. And the thing is, if you've seen this episode, like, there's no point us just saying the quotes. So this might actually be kind of a shorter recording. I don't know how long we've been talking.
40 minutes.
Yeah, okay. There are a couple of things that I do want to, like, quickly touch on, but I just so that people listening at home, my notes are literally just quotes and then the cry laughing emoji or the words, I'm deceased. Like, that's all of my notes.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, every 30 seconds, I took a note.
Are any of them Jay got me good? LMA player.
No, but I did have Misha fake acting is so fucking funny. And also, I like the cameo of Misha can't throw Collins. I also want to quickly mention that I think Dean's reaction to the Days of Our Lives clip is fucking iconic. I love it so, so, so much.
One thing that I do want to say is there was a framing choice this week, and I fucking think it's so goddamn funny. When you've got Jared Padalecki sitting at the computer, like, typing in Biden something, and then you pan out and you've got the fucking picture of him as a cowboy.
Foreshadowing is so funny.
Just the way that it, like, it cuts between the wide shot and the close shot. And the close shot, you can't tell. And then it goes wide, and you're like, they've just decked this house out with so much, like, Jared Padalecki and, like, so much of Jared and Jen's faces.
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere.
It's hilarious. I also love when they first walk in and Jensen or Dean says something about, like, the house. Like, some clients like, oh, like, McMansion or, like, you know.
Nice digs or something like that.
Yeah. And Sam comes back with, wow, I must be the star of this thing. And it's just like the way that he was literally supposed to be the main character. And then after three episodes, that went down the fucking toilet. Like, I really think it's so funny. And again, I don't think that that's necessarily like an actual commentary that they were making. It's just funny for me because of how I read the show. But
I also think it would be funny if we see like, if we saw both of their houses and like Jared's house is like this massive mansion. And then we go back to Jensen's house and it's fucking like,
he's living in a share house.
Yeah.
I do love so much about this episode. I'm so glad that it stands up so well because I do think it's the kind of thing that could have aged really poorly. But I do think that it holds up really well. I do want to make a note that when they're doing, like, they're trying to get through that fucking scene, Dean just staring unblinking at Misha is actually the most in-character acting in the whole show. Like, the whole time they're fake acting, there's one clip where Jensen is just staring point blank at Misha and there is no blinking, no dialogue, and Jared's doing something in the background, and I'm like, that's actually the only in-character thing he's done.
I will say though, I do appreciate so much this week, Jared Padalecki is a very good comedic actor.
Yeah.
And they very rarely give him things to do with the fact that he is a very good comedic actor.
Mm-hmm.
This week, the moment where they're fake acting.
Oh god.
And he gets the note, oh, don't stare directly at the camera. So he's just like looking up and around. Hilarious, so fucking good. If you look at him in the background, he's not even doing anything, he's just standing in the background, but he looks so awkward, like he has no idea where to put his arms.
Oh.
And he's just
the thing about the, like, if there is a key then there must be a lock, and like the hands and the, oh god, it's so fucking good. The other thing that I wanted to mention is Dean making a point of lowering his voice really aggressively and Sam being like, what are you doing? He's like, that's how he does it. And it's like, it's so fucking funny. But yes, I do think that both Jensen and Jared specifically are phenomenal comedic actors. And you're right. It's really unfortunate that they're in such a serious show most of the time because, like, we don't get to appreciate it.
Yeah.
But it does mean that when they do get to stretch those muscles, God, do they really give it their all. And it is so fucking fun.
The comedic timing of the scene where, like, they first see Jen again, you can see him physically try to work out what the fuck her name is. He's like, clearly there's something happening here. But like,
yeah, we actually get the line from Sam at one point where he's like, I should really figure out her name. And it's so funny because like, yeah, of course he doesn't know her fucking name. And oh God, also the fact that they make a point about Robert Singer being named Robert Singer. Hilarious. What I do want to point out is like a more like serious, like meta analysis point on this episode is that Bob Singer does make a very specific, like, you cannot make up your own lines as you go. And I don't think it was necessarily intentional, but it absolutely could have been a callback to the monster at the end of this book.
Mm-hmm.
Where, what's the monster at the end of this book?
They're trying to change what Chuck's written.
Cash shows up and he's like, we're making it up as we go. I don't think that is the monster at the end of this book. That's season 5.
But so, you're also kind of correct in that it's like a reference to monster at the end of this book and the way they keep on trying to circumnavigate what Chuck has written for them, and it still comes true. Like,
yeah, it's like the whole like prophecy thing. But I do really think that it's fun that you have like this person who has really strong creative power over this entity that is supernatural, looking at them and going, you are not in charge of this story. And like, as actors, they're not. But I think that it's fascinating as like a meta concept
for basically this universe's equivalent of God to be telling them, no.
You don't get to make up your own lines. And obviously the context here is different. Yeah. Like, yeah, they should not be making up their own lines.
The unprofessionalism is unreal.
Yeah.
The fact that they have the little tiny scripts that they, like, pull out.
I know, it's so good. The fact that Dean at one point says, Dean, grimly, and then says the line. Hilarious. I'm obsessed with that. But yeah, so I think that it is interesting that they do have, like, a high-level creative telling them, you don't get to make it up as you go. Because we've heard that before.
Yeah.
And we will hear that again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this is an interesting like midpoint to have that come from the depiction of someone who is actually part of production in such a context. I think it's fascinating.
Okie dokies. What do you think my PSA is going to be this week, Beth?
I don't have a single fucking clue in hell. Like, always check the backseat. Trust your gut. Because one of my favorite moments in this episode is Misha doing the tweet where he's like, ever get the feeling that someone's in the backseat? And I'm like, masterclass in foreshadowing. trust your gut and always check your backseat.
Well, that's better than my actual PSA this week.
Oh, what's your actual PSA?
Which is make sure you always shut your fridge properly for both energy efficiency reasons and also you really don't want your lamb's blood to spoil.
I mean, that's valid. You should definitely check that your fridge door is closed properly. Although mine beeps at me if it's not closed properly. I don't know if yours does, but
I think that's a modern fridge thing, though.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think any fridge has really had that.
Bobby's fridge has probably not got a beep function. Yeah. No.
What I did want to ask about, though.
Yeah.
Bobby keeps lamb's blood in the fridge.
Bobby is prepared for anything.
How many uses does lamb's blood actually have? Like, how practical is this?
It must be, like, he had the bones of a lesser saint, Jamie. I think he's just prepared for most things.
Does he have to, like, get fresh lamb's blood, like, every week or something? Like, does lamb's blood go back?
I feel like it must. Like, it's an animal product, so it's perishable. I think that he probably has a really weird but friendly relationship with the local butcher.
I was thinking he just had, like, a lamb out the back and would, like, take blood.
Oh, like I thought you meant, like, he was just slaughtering
lambs. No.
But you mean, like, a donation.
Yeah.
So Bobby's got, like, a petting zoo out back.
Yeah.
What a weird fucking concept.
And he's, like, it's like a blood drive, like.
Oh, that's funny. Like an ethical vampire, but yeah. It's Bobby. What a weird, I mean, maybe he
does could. This mean that Witch Bobby is real?
I think that Bobby and witchcraft are so intertwined at this point. I don't know if he would identify himself as a witch, but I also think that we've talked about this before. Like
he's not a witch, but he's not a witch.
Where the line is drawn of like when you can be classed as a witch is so fucking blurry and supernatural because they do magic, but they're not witches. But other people who do magic automatically are. Like, explain yourself, supernatural.
So essentially, Bobby's not a witch, but he's also not a witch.
Yeah, kind of like Sarah Gamble wasn't not trying to kill Erica Kintaker in this show.
But she's not trying to
kill. Yeah, exactly. Okay, one of the other things that I wanted to touch on is obviously, like, as fun and silly as this episode is, the beginning and the end of the episode, we do get some plot. I would say not a huge amount of plot, but we do get some plot.
Sprinklings of plot.
A sprinkling of plot, kind of like changing channels, really. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. When they do these big meta episodes, typically it's like it's a lot of fun, and then right at the end they'll throw in a like, mm-hmm. hey, it's actually relevant. Mm-hmm. You actually do need to watch this episode. It's not just for funsies. So in terms of the plot information that we get, obviously the whole thing was kind of like a power play with Balthazar using the boys as a distraction so that he and Cass could hunt down the weapons of heaven while Raphael was essentially, as Balthazar put it, playing a game of fetch. I do also love that Balthazar said that Sam and Dean made an adequate stick in that game of fetch. I think it's funny. Yeah.
Could have been better. Could have been worse.
Considering they didn't know that they were a diversion, I think they did fine. But now Cass has the weapons of heaven. I have a note that says Cass brought the literal big guns. Do you have any thoughts, feelings regarding the whole Civil War thing that's happening?
Not really. Like, I feel like they literally call it out in this episode of, like, we don't know what's happening. We just know what's at stake. All you've given us is stakes.
Yeah.
So I think, like, this is literally them just saying, well, you're not going to get it. Like, if you don't understand what's actually happening, that's fine. You're not meant to understand what's happening. Because, like, these two jabronis don't have the information.
And we're seeing the story from their perspective. Yeah, okay. I also want to quickly touch on the fact that we get a wing update from Cass. We don't often get to see Cass flex his wings. When we do, he's usually showing off, or it is a pointed, like, narrative thing, like it's an audience insight thing. And so I think that it is really cool to see him show off his wings and be like, look at me, I'm a powerful, scary boy. You know, it's very reminiscent.
He's a big boy now.
Exactly. It's very reminiscent of 401. Like, he does the same thing. Like, he's trying to fluff himself up and be intimidating. And he does it to Raphael here in the same way that he sort of did it to Dean to, like, prove his power, right? And so I think it's a fun return. And also the shot that was used, like, the placement of the camera and things are very similar. Like, it's a very much an echo of that previous scene. And so I think it's interesting to see it happen here again.
I will just say, though, evil ladies are my jam. I'm rooting for Cass a hell of a lot less in the Civil War. I hate to say it.
Because you like Raphael's new vessel?
Yeah.
Okay. I really would love to, like, do a deep dive at some point. Maybe it's, like, a bonus episode, but, like, the concept of angels and gender. Because, like, I think that Raphael as a character, based in the way that they're presented, would identify as having he, him pronouns. Sort of similarly to Cass, like, we only really see Cass identify with he, him pronouns. But because, like, obviously, like, they can be in vessels that have an identity as any gender, I do think that it is really inherently interesting to, like, discuss the way that angels do identify, because we do get, like, angels that identify as female or use she, her pronouns. And I wonder, like, and this is, like, a genuine thing that's always kind of interested me, do they choose pronouns that they particularly identify with, or do they just default to whatever their vessel is just by virtue of conforming?
I think that's kind of the thing of, like, at first they just default to whatever pronouns their vessel has, and then over time they'll probably develop, like, a preference.
A more of an identity surrounding it. Because I do think it's really interesting. We see various angels across the series in vessels of varying gender, and actually demons as well. And only in one instance that I can think of do we have the character actually say, no, like, that's not my pronouns, essentially. Like, you still call me by these pronouns. And so I think it's, like, an interesting concept to kind of play with. But yeah, no, I think it's fun to get a new vessel for Raphael, because I think it's fun to remember that they are vessels, in a sense. Like, this isn't actually an angel's true visage. This is just the only way humans can look at them without their eyes burning out of their faces. Like, I think that that's a fun reminder, you know? Like, we can have this shift in physical appearance. We also, in this episode, get Sam and Dean asking Cass, like, oh, what, you were in on this, on using us as a distraction? And Cass said, look, it was Balthazar's plan, but I would have done the same thing. And then I think Dean says, well, that's not comforting, Cass. And I wanted to point this out just because, like, I think that it does something to outline how severe the situation is, because we both know that Cass would not put Sam or Dean at risk if there was a viable other option. Like, at this point, it's pretty well established that he is concerned for their well-being more so than heaven would want him to be. So, like, the fact that he would allow this to happen or had even considered doing it himself, I think says something for the direness of the situation, even though he's not giving us any real information about what's going on. Like, I think you can imply that it's quite a desperate scenario.
There's a quote that's, I'm trying to just work out so I can source it correctly, But it basically is like, why would I bother saving the universe? And the response was, because I'm one of the idiots who lives in it.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or it's where I keep all my stuff, you know? Yeah. Like.
But that's the vibes it's giving me. It's from Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, what did the galaxy ever do to you? Why would you want to save it? Because I'm one of the idiots who lives in it.
Yeah.
So this is what it's giving. It's giving, we needed you to do this. We needed to do this because otherwise you're going to die anyway. Like, you can, yeah, we can either do this and you maybe die here,
mm-hmm,
and then everyone dies later, or maybe you live here and then maybe everyone lives later, or we don't do this at all and you live here but you'd still die later.
Yeah, exactly. Like, at some point everyone's gonna die. It's just, yeah, like, how soon is that some point, yeah, and in what manner does it happen?
Yes.
And so I just think that it's interesting because, like you said earlier, like, they point out in this episode that we really don't know much. We just know that Cass is stressed.
Yeah.
And that obviously he and Raphael are reaching a, like, I don't mind, like, pointing this out to you if you haven't already noticed, but I think it's relatively evident at this point. We're coming up to, like, a climactic point, yeah, with those two. Like,
it's been slowly building all season and now they've actually finally, like.
Yeah. And, like, this episode, yeah, they're basically having a bit of a pissing match,
mm-hmm,
and being like, well, I'm more powerful than you and blah, 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 blah. And the problem being, obviously, that Cass is not actually an archangel. So if he is going to have a fighting chance to take down Raphael, he does need the supplementation, yeah, of all of the weapons of heaven and, you know, these things to stand a fighting chance.
Yeah.
And so
Cass with the weapons of heaven is an equal match for Raphael, but Raphael with the weapons of heaven against Cass is no competition.
Well, it's also like Cass with nothing versus Raphael, yeah, is also like no competition. Yeah. Because Raphael has the equivalent power of Gabriel or, mm-hmm, Lucifer.
He's just baseline more powerful than Cass.
Yeah, and Michael. And, like, we have seen, like, if you think back to Changing Channels, Gabriel just snapped his fingers and Cass was just fucking gone. Mm-hmm. Like, it took Dean being like, bring him the fuck, yeah, back. It's clearly not costing them too much to just take Cass, mm-hmm, off the playing board for a little bit.
Yeah.
So for Cass to be able to succeed, he has to go to lengths to make, yeah, sure that he has that extra, mm-hmm, firepower, essentially.
It wouldn't be surprising to me, though, if Cass isn't doing all of this specifically for Dean.
Mm.
If that makes sense. Like, I don't think Cass really cares too much about the Earth or humans. But it wouldn't be surprising if kind of, like, a very big motivating factor for him would be, mm, Dean.
So it's just, he's, like, draping himself in, like, the flag of heaven. Yeah. But, like, it's all about saving one human, basically.
Yeah, because, yeah, it's, like, I just don't understand what motive Cass has to try and, if he wanted to, he could fall in line under Raphael and he could probably make it work. He doesn't necessarily have to go against Raphael.
Well, Raphael wants to restart the apocalypse.
Yes.
So for Cass's sacrifices and, mm-hmm, boy's sacrifices to remain worth it, then, yeah, he needs to oppose Raphael.
Exactly.
But you're right. His motivations are certainly interesting because I think that in a sense he is doing it for himself.
Yeah.
But
the reason he did it for himself in the first place
is because of his relationship with Dean.
Yeah, yeah, so, like, by extension, this is still, anything he's doing now for himself, he's still doing for Dean as well by extension, because he only started down this path for Dean. If he wanted to, he doesn't have to go against Raphael. He's an angel. He could theoretically survive the apocalypse. Like, it's not self-preservation that's making him do this. There has to be a reason why he wants to save Earth, and I'm just positing that reason is probably Dean.
Or Dean adjacent.
Or Dean adjacent.
I think that Cass as a character is very fascinating. Do you remember way back when, last season, Lucifer was saying to Cass, like, you know, you and I are the same kind of thing, and Cass is like, well, we're nothing alike, what are you talking about? As much as I think that Lucifer was talking shit, I also think he has kind of a point. I think that they are fundamentally similar and different. And my reason for this is that Lucifer fell, in the narrative of Supernatural, Lucifer fell because he refused to love humanity and recognize humanity as greater than God in the way that God asked them to, right? God was like, I need you to love humans above all things. They are my greatest creation. And Lucifer took that as a personal affront and was like, no, I can't do that. I can't love them above you, whatever. And so, like, that was, like, the whole instigation.
Equal opposite daddy issues.
Cass has kind of the other problem. Like, mm-hmm, Cass is so fascinated by and intrigued by and fond of humanity. And, like, yes, that starts with Dean, but, like, I think for the Earth as a whole, mm-hmm, like, and we'll see this more as we see him on Earth more and more regularly in seasons. Obviously, this season he's a bit MIA, but
Sarah Gamble long gone.
Sarah Gamble long gone. But he has such a fondness for humanity. And I think that it is more fondness than Chuck actually wanted. Like,
yeah.
Realistically, Cass is the only angel that actually cares about humanity in the way that theoretically they were supposed to.
It was a power trip.
Yeah.
God asking the angels to love humanity more than anything was a power trip. It was to watch them fall over themselves to try and pretend to love something more than they loved God.
Yeah. They're ultimately trying to please him.
Yes.
And the fact is that Cass actually did learn to love humanity
more than he loved God, which is a problem. Because it wasn't about them actually doing it. It was about them tripping over themselves to look like they were following his orders.
Yeah. And so the problem is, like,
Lucifer Cass never even tried. Lucifer refused.
Yeah.
Cass
did the assignment.
And then all of the other angels in the middle did exactly what God wanted them to do, which was pretend to love humanity. Try, basically do everything they can to love humanity.
Yeah, but still call them slurs.
But still call them slurs. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly. And so I think that it is really interesting. And I think that Cass is a character, like, I think, unfortunately, one thing that does tend to happen in fandom and in fanon, actually, with Cass, is that his whole arc and character development, it is so intertwined with Destiel and that concept that I think that, unfortunately, a lot of the time it does get reduced to just Dean. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that there was a huge, like, weirdly huge discourse. I want to say it was maybe just after the Tumblr polls function came out, or, like, around that time. It's a little while ago now. And one of the questions that was being asked is, like, as a fandom, what do we want to, like, try and collectively agree is Cass's birthday? Because there obviously isn't really a clear one given. But a lot of people, myself included, always just sort of assumed that we would recognize September 18th as Cass's birthday because that was the date that 401 aired initially, right? Yeah. But there was a real bit of discourse about it because people were upset that it is so associated with Dean. And it's like, can we just give him anything that is not tied to Dean? And I was like, I'd never considered it that way, but I do kind of understand the point. Mm-hmm. Because I think so much discussion is centered around that one relationship. And it kind of does that thing which happens to female characters a lot, where it's just like their plot line is reduced to their male love interest. Mm-hmm. And it's like, he is more than that. He is his own character and definitely has his own plots and developments. And they do often get, I think, forgotten a little bit by the wayside.
But I think the thing there is then you have to find another day that is significant to Castiel.
Yeah, and so don't get me wrong, like, I'm not going to comment on that whole discourse. I don't really care what side of the aisle you fell on there. I think everyone should just be nice to each other. It's not that big of a deal. But, like, as an example, like, I do think that some of Cass's arcs, and don't get me wrong, some of them are heavily entwined with Dean. Yeah. You cannot separate them. They are too messed up in each other. But I think that some of it does get reduced by, like, oh, he did that for Dean. And I'm like, I agree, but I also think it's more complicated than that.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's more nuanced. Like, you can talk about it as him doing it for Dean. I believe that that's true. But I don't think you can discount things like his conversation with Anna, where he's like, for the first time, I feel. Like, because that, like, yes, he's related to Dean. Yeah.
But it started with Dean, but it does not end with Dean.
Yeah, you know, and I think that that is an inherent sort of issue within fandoms across the board. Like, I'm not saying that this is specific to this particular show or this particular character dynamic, but I definitely think that it's something to consider when talking about Cass's motives is that, yeah, a lot of it is tied to Dean. Like, I'm not going to try and act like that's not the case, but it's certainly not exclusive.
Mm-hmm. And I think actually this season is one of the furthest removed from Dean's character plots for Cass so far. Because season 4 and 5 is so heavily intertwined with Dean that this is the first time we're really seeing him get an actual arc of his own. And it's just a shame that because it is framed from Dean and Sam's point of view, we're seeing absolutely nothing. None of it, really.
What I will say is by the end of the season, we do get a bigger snapshot of what Cass has been up to. Because obviously, like, they're not going to just
war crimes, so he's a poor little meow-meow.
Cass committing war crimes left, right, and center. But it happened off screen, so it's fine.
Yeah.
No, I think,
and he looked fab while doing it, so who cares?
Of course he did. So obviously, like, this is, like, part of the plot of the season. I don't think it's a spoiler to tell you that we do get more information about what's happening in heaven behind the scenes. So,
oh, you mean this massive plot thing that they've been setting up for the last 15 episodes
will actually be relevant? Shocking, I know. So Eric rare Kripke for Supernatural. The Sarah Gamble on con. But, like, genuinely, I really do want to come back to this topic.
Yeah.
Because I think once you have the full sort of view of what has been happening, the concept of Cass's motivations and how much his motivation is driven by his relationship to Dean is definitely something that we will come back to, because there are certainly decisions that he makes motivated by his feelings surrounding Dean, where, like, if he removed that from the equation, then maybe he would have made different decisions. It's definitely pertinent to the story. And we'll get to talk about it relatively soon. Anywho, did you have anything else that you wanted to touch on? My only notes left, really, are, like, just funny lines. The only other thing I had that was, like, of sort of more significance is something-something Dean sitting in Bobby's chair. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was like, there's something here.
There's something here. It's tickling the brain worms, but it's not quite a fully formed thought.
Yeah.
Like, you're right. There's probably something there, but, like, I don't have the words to come out with any sort of eloquence.
Yes. Also, Dean still considered snacks this episode. Someone walked past with a bunch of snacks, and
What is so funny is this is actually probably one of the safest opportunities for him to eat snacks. While in the middle of something absolutely batshit and dangerous.
Yeah.
So it's amazing to me that he doesn't eat snacks here, but he did in fact eat snacks when he was abducted by, like...
Yeah. He's like, these people could potentially be murderous demigods. Yeah, I'll eat their peanut brittle.
Like, that's the obvious solution. Like, clearly. But no, I don't actually have too much else to add. It's a very fun episode. It's very funny. There's meta all over the place with this one. Like, it's just really hitting you over the head with it. Mm-hmm. But, like, there is not too much else to say. Like, I feel like if you've seen the episode, you're well aware of the meta.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things where, like, because it is so obvious, it's almost, like, pointless for us to reiterate it.
Like, we don't need to go through and dissect it. Like, if you've seen the episode, you know where the meta is. Like,
yeah, like, and it's all silly stuff. Like, they're sort of taking the piss a lot, like, you know, Misha's celebrity tweet, the least we can do is get out of the Canadian part of it, you know. What I will say, though, is there's one moment where Sam and Dean are beating up Virgil, and one of the people who rushes over to break up the fight, I don't know which of the three who ran over it was, but one of them is just going, not good, not good, and I'm like, that's so funny, that's Sam-level understatements, like...
Well, he didn't beat him to just death, just almost to death, that's fine.
Yeah. I think the only other thing of relevance that I want to bring up is that there's a moment at the very end where Sam is really grounding himself back in reality by hitting and, like, grasping at the solid wall. That will be relevant within Gamble era. Sam finding, like, I suppose, reassurance in physicality.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting that they included it here. Whether or not they knew that that's the direction they were going to be going at this point, I don't know. But if they did, I think it's fascinating that they had Sam be the one who, like, grabs the wall and is like, it's solid, it's real.
It is something physically there.
I trust it. Because I think that of the two of them, Dean is typically very tactile. Mm-hmm. And for him to just, like, believe that the angels, even if it is Cass, like, willingly transported them back to Bobby's house and all's well and good now, I think it's interesting that they had Sam be the one who's like, no, I have to test for myself and make sure that I believe that this is reality. Anywho, did you have any other points? Are you happy that you've covered everything you wanted to?
I think I've covered everything that I wanted to.
In that case, how would you rate 6:15, The French Mistake, out of 5?
I think I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Yeah.
Like, it's very solid. It's very funny. It is everything you want from a meta episode of Supernatural, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't really fault it on much. It's pretty goddamn solid.
Yeah. I've said it before and I'll say it again, but Supernatural is really... Yeah. In its peak and in its stride, the more that it leans into
meta concepts. Also, I'm just inherently a comedy bitch. Like,
yeah, it's also just very funny.
Yeah.
And it's really held up quite well.
Mm-hmm. I am and always will be a comedy bitch. Yeah. Like, that is the long and short of it. That is the truth.
It's also such a fast-paced episode, and I think that really helps with the pacing of, like, the jokes. Like,
yeah.
You really get very little downtime between gags. And I think that just helped the episode flow really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
The next episode is titled And Then There Were None. Do you have any thoughts, feelings, hopes, dreams, fears, or predictions?
Ooh, I don't know why, but it's giving me, like, hide-and-seek vibes. And I don't know why.
I'm going to be honest. I don't actually remember explicitly what happens in the next episode. I know the next few that we have coming up, like, vaguely, but I can't remember what order they're in. But I kind of get what you mean with that title and, like the concept of hide-and-seek. Like, I feel like it does... The concept makes sense in my brain.
They're obviously, like, he's given Cass all of the weapons now. So, like, maybe they're going through and, like, tracking down, like, all of Raphael's, like, collaborators or something. Like, and then there were none. Like, They're counting down. I also think it's like a movie reference. Like, I'm pretty sure there's a movie called And Then There Were None.
I mean, quite possibly. I feel like it's maybe a line from, like, to me it's giving nursery rhyme.
And Then There Were None. It's a murder mystery.
Oh, okay, cool. Oh, do you know what? I think I know what episode it is now that I know that. Okay, so do you think that Cass will be in next week's episode?
I think he has to be. Like, I don't know if it quite makes sense for Cass to not be there. After this week, like, it seems like they're trying to ramp up the plot. It doesn't make really a lot of sense to, like,
cut him back again.
Cut the pacing again and cut him out of the next episode, you know?
Yeah. No, that's valid. And that just about does it for this week's episode. So thank you so very much for listening. I hope you've had as much fun listening as we have had recording. If you wanted to get in touch with us at all outside of listening to us waffle on in your ear for an hour or so every week, you can always find us on any of our social medias. All of the descriptions will be in the link below.
All of the descriptions will be in the link below? All of the descriptions
will be in the link below. Yep, that's exactly...
That's how it works.
That's what I've always said. Mm-hmm. I always said that. And I think that it always works really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Anyway, thanks so much for listening. If you did want to get in touch, if you're looking for possible conversation topics, you could try. Wow, I'm doing so good. You know what I mean. If you're here, you know.
What other, like, meta gags do you kind of wish they'd done? Like, I kind of wish they'd done with, like, the costume department and being like, oh, cool, you've got a head of your layers now. I'm like,
yeah.
You know.
I think it would have been fun to have them pull out a gun because we get to see them, like, playing with the knives and the floppy glass and stuff, and I do think that's fun.
Yeah.
I feel like just getting them playing with more props and, like, fiddling around with the technical side of things I think would have been really fun.
I think they could have done, like, a fan meet and greet, like, on the set, like, and bring Becky back.
As much as I love the concept of this episode, one thing that I do miss is that the only, like, fan convention we ever really get is the one that we had with, like, the real Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
I would have adored to see Jensen and Jared trying to play Sam and Dean
playing Jensen and Jared
on stage answering questions at a con. Like, I do think,
you know what would be so funny is they'd probably actually have more insightful answers about the actual plot. Because, like, I want to be clear here, like, this is nothing against, like, Jensen and Jared, but, like, also, like, they don't actually really actively watch the show.
Yeah.
So, like, they are quite limited in their perspective of what's actually happening, like, plot wise
yeah,
whereas Sam and Dean kind of have, like...
They have to know the plot because it's literally their lived experience. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's not just a day at work for them. It's like, no, that happened to me. My guts fell out on the floor and it was bad. So I think that that would have been a really fun thing. Like, I know that we sort of get the interview with Jared, but I definitely think it would have been really fun to have them be like, okay, guys, so after set today, like, we're going to this...
Remember, we've got that, like, fan meet and greet for the, like, competition winners. Like,
yeah, I think... That could have been really fun, although, like, this episode is already so jam-packed.
Yeah.
Like, where the fuck they would have fit
that? Where they would have fit that, I don't know, but I think it would have been very funny.
Anyway, thank you again for listening, and hopefully we have you back next week.
Bye!
Wow, that was so harmonized.
Ooh, look at us go.
Oh my goodness. Just in time for the Eras Tour movie.